think we're waiting for Francois, but let's go ahead and get started, just because we have quite a bit to get through today. So our agenda is here. And I'm up to scribe today, so I'll do my best to do that. I might need you guys to jump in if we get into long discussions about things. Any other updates or changes to the agenda? Anything more to discuss?
Publishing schedule, I guess, right? Nominally, things should be done this month, this week.
This week is going to be difficult, but yes, I agree. All right, so let's see. Okay, so no updates or changes to the agenda. First topic up is Jeremy Carroll has requested for Jason LD to add bass. So this is something we have discussed before. He's suggested three things that we've kind of danced around. This is so close to the last call that if we do decide to add bass in, we would have to go through another last call. So strategically speaking, we might want to add the feature in as at risk and then lobby very hard for removing it after last call if Jeremy says that it doesn't need to be there. Adding in the feature is technically a pretty easy thing to do, but I think we were really trying to avoid adding yet another keyword, especially since we believe that we have an alternative solution for bass. Nicholas, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I got my phone line was a bit dodgy here, but so I might have missed something. What was the alternative to bass?
The idea was that you'd prefix it. You'd set up a prefix for the document, a term for the document, and then use that to prefix every IRI.
All right. I don't think they're the same, though. And I am still, as I've always been, pro-base as a keyword, because we have the base everywhere as a concept, so I feel that it's pretty natural to have a way to set it explicitly as well.
Yeah, I feel pretty much the same way, that it's important to be able to use a base description in there. Now, if it was simply possible to add a prefix to the context to have the same effect, you could do that. But adding a prefix to the document does not allow you to automatically resolve relative IRIs relative to that prefix. It requires it to be rewritten.
Mm-hmm. Any other thoughts on base, adding base?
I'd be for it. I think it's a really easy feature to add. I can see lots of other people starting to, from the RDF community, starting to wonder how to do that.
And it's the same. It was missing from Turtle for a long time, and it was added because of that desire to have it. And as you know, Turtle have the same features for prefixes and stuff, so I think certain people used it to an extent there. Okay, there are other limits with the form of QRIs there, or QNames, but in essence, it's the same.
Okay, well, I mean, it sounds like we have a fairly wide consensus on this. So the proposal is to add base to the JSON-LD syntax. Should we mark it as at risk? I prefer marking it as at risk, but I doubt we'd remove it at this point.
Sure, I would prefer to mark it as at risk, yeah.
Okay.
That's fine.
All right, so proposal add base to the JSON-LD syntax as an at-risk feature.
We need to clarify, though, exactly where to use that base. Is it limited to contacts? I think Jeremy's suggestion included using it within the within a an object as well. As I recall.
Yeah, we do need to discuss that.
Yeah, the
does
first
anyone have any strong feelings,
it?
I guess, on where we allow base? I think that Jeremy's point that if we allow it in the context that you could include a context that changes the base of the document magically, and that would be dangerous because you wouldn't see it happen, really. So that argument basically says that the only bases that you... There are two ways that we could address that. The only base that you process has to exist in the document or in a context, or we say that base cannot exist inside the context. It must exist in the body of the document, and then whenever it's mentioned in the body of the document, it changes the base for the processor.
I would like that. In general, there is possibly an argument against it for uniformity's sake, and that is that language could also have been put in anywhere in the document that would make it align with XML lang and XML base. So I wonder if the fact that language is used in the context is an argument for using base in the context as well.
Yeah, I think the other possibility is that it's restricted from being used in a remote context.
Yeah.
So it needs to be in line, and sort of syntactically that sort of ties all of the things that, you know, that describe metadata about the document within context. And of course the same could be done for language as well. We might consider adding a restriction on language being used in a remote context.
Yeah.
But
the question.
Marcus.
But I mean, the question is really: do you trust the remote context? If you don't, you wouldn't, or you shouldn't use it at all anyway. And if you trust it, you can. Almost
yeah.
Be sure that base and language wouldn't be in there.
That's true. We could say that you should not use neither base nor language in context intended for reuse or remote linkage.
Well, so the argument against restricting language is that an organization might always publish in a certain language. So allowing their default context to be able to set that, makes sense. Now, setting it in a base doesn't make as much sense because essentially you're saying that every document that's published and uses that context is the same thing. And that is, I think, nonsensical.
Well, not necessarily. It could be the base domain or something like that, and then in all their documents they use absolute.
Or it could be null. It could be null for transient messages.
Yeah.
Well, that's true.
So perhaps should is enough. I mean, if you're using an external context, if I get things, you can always in your local context say language and base are null to reset those if you use an external context which has them defined in spite of this advice.
Dave was suggesting an alternate interpretation of null in that case, I think. Because I think otherwise, if you set it to null, that would imply to me that it would go back to being the document location.
Yeah, right.
But
yeah,
I guess if the document has no location, then...
Right.
My RDF parsers, if they don't have a document location, just output relative IRIs. It's not legal as a sort of in and of itself, but anyone that's parsing the document can apply a base to it in order to make them legal. So,
Yeah. I think RDFlib works like that as well in Python.
Yeah. Actually, this is kind of a side thread, but I think we were saying that we should do the same thing for graph names and predicates in the RDF dataset normalization algorithm. It just outputs in other people that read the information in can apply base to it if they want. But that's neither here nor there. We shouldn't get into it. But I think the same that this approach seems to work for a variety of use cases. So I guess what it seems like what I'm hearing is that we should allow a base and language both inside and outside of the context and in remote contexts as well. But we should have language in there that says anyone that's publishing a remote context or something that's a context that's going to be used as a remote context should not use language or base in that remote context.
I think that's too strong. I think just a note about that is adequate, because there's no reason for us to normatively say that it should not be done. I think my feeling was that given that we can do it locally within a context, it's sort of better to keep that meta information within the context rather than outside of the context in a document.
Yeah, it's nice, I think, to wrap everything up in the context key.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I missed that, Greg, because I was describing
old
stuff.
Yeah, I did not see a good reason to have either base or language outside of context. Putting it inside of a context, typically a local context, it just ties everything up in one nice area within the document.
Don't we support language outside of context?
No.
Or no? Okay, that's fine. I thought we did that.
I think we were heading towards that at one point, at least in discussions, but
It had to do with property generator expansion and having to keep language around for objects.
Right.
Or language maps.
Language maps. Yeah. Well, we do allow them in literals, of course, but that's another detail.
Okay, so the proposal is support base and language in the context, base and language declarations in the context, warn developers that contexts, what did I say, JSON LD contexts that are to be used as remote contexts probably shouldn't include language or base, period. Anything else? Okay, there's a proposal. So any changes to it?
Well, I don't know that we need to mention at language again, since we're not making a change.
Right.
I was just trying to clarify, since I was confused about it.
Okay.
That's fine.
All right. That is resolved. Are there any other concerns about this before we move on? Okay.
I'm just know that sometimes a year later on, I've had to go back and try to decipher what happened in the meeting. So.
Right. yeah. Can you imagine if we didn't scribe this stuff and then try to figure out what happened in the past? Okay. Our favorite issue is up next. Blank node identifiers as graph names.
I think it's fairly obvious that the RDF working group isn't going to budge on this, and that some people in the RDF working group are getting very annoyed that we're even discussing this. It is, Dave Lane, Dave Longley, and I had a discussion about this in the office yesterday, and it's fairly clear, at least, I'm not speaking for either Dave, but it's fairly clear to me that I don't think some of the people that are opposing this are necessarily thinking through or have read the reasons why we believe that this should be put into the RDF data model. Mostly the arguments are just completely off, at least from my point of view, the arguments that Stephen and Andy are using are just completely off base. And the same goes for Gavin. I think what we can do is just say we're going to drop this. We're going to drop talking about this in the RDF working group because it is eating up precious time in that group. If this group is okay with it, I think JSON-LD can continue to support blank node identifiers in the predicate and graph name position, but when you go to translate it to RDF, it'll just go ahead and pass the blank node through. Basically, it'll generate RDF that's not valid. If you try to suck it into a system that does not support blank node identifiers in those positions, but if you try to suck it into a system that does support it, like ours, it'll just go through without an issue. Now I know that Greg, in the past, you said if the RDF data model doesn't support it, we really shouldn't do anything outside of it. But the alternate proposal that we put into that blog post is so bad that we don't feel comfortable implementing it because we think it will do long-term damage to RDF. And basically, this thing that is basically a blank node identifier and everything but name is the solution that a number of people in the working group have said is fine, but it really is not okay. It's a fairly bad solution. And so rather than put that hack in to, you know, JSON-LD and the RDF dataset normalization algorithm, we should probably just stay silent on it. I had a chat with Kingsley offline. This shouldn't be, well, I had a chat with Kingsley offline, and he said he's been kind of pushing for this for the last 12 years, so that's no secret, and that he doesn't feel that some of the arguments are coming from implementation experience, and Kingsley did reiterate that having a blank node identifier in the graph position does make the algorithms for a data store more complex, but that's beside the point. That's an optimization that you don't necessarily have to, you know, if you're going to use blank node identifiers, then that optimization cannot be used in the system. It's not a good argument. Legacy implementations is not a good argument for not supporting it. So anyway, I think the at least from what the Dave and I talked about yesterday, I think our preference would be to keep JSON-LD supporting blank nodes as predicates and graph names. Like Greg mentioned, you know, you can pass these names through and the RDF, to the RDF conversion to RDF algorithm, and specifically in NQuads, it'll just spit out the blank nodes, and it'll be invalid for systems that do not support blank node identifiers for graph names. And if the people want it to be valid, then they're going to have to name it with an actual IRI. Specifically, we shouldn't throw an error in that case. We should just let it pass through. Nicholas, you're on the queue, but I'd be interested to hear everyone's opinion on this approach.
Yeah, I am basically in agreement with you. As long as the language is very explicit about this not working for compliant RDF systems, and that we support it syntactically, but stay silent on it in spirit, if you will, so that people who need it can use it, but we can't guarantee that it will be effective. So in general, if you're using this for RDF, you must not use this, because you will be violating RDF 1.1 abstract syntax. But I think that the discussion, I think that it was good to add these things. I sympathize with the problems with the procedure that it has caused, but I think that a lot of opinions were vented that were very useful, not the least Pat Hayes, very precise insight into the semantics and the possibilities there. So I think it was very enlightening to read, although a bit frustrating for some, I understand. So yes, with the appropriate notes, I would not be against this. And also there are systems that already support B-nodes for graph names in the wild. I think RDFlib does it and stuff like that. So they will probably add an RDF 1.1 compliance level, since these are standardized parts and you might be able to work around it and parse RDF data sets with B-nodes into, for instance, RDFlib. I don't know, but I understand the limitations on storage, and the graph names are usually used in that aspect, so I also understand why RDF 1.1 does not support it. But yeah, that's just my general summary of my opinions.
Okay. Greg?
Yeah, the only concern, I guess, is that the algorithm, specifically the node map to RDF sub-algorithm and the convert to RDF algorithm are pretty closely written with regards to the abstract syntax. So for instance, they return a triple, and if you follow triple, it refers specifically to the RDF triple in concepts. But yet we say we're composing a triple using a blank node. And then similarly in the convert to RDF algorithm, we are creating a named graph named by a blank node. So I'm concerned that that's not part of the data set that we're specifically outputting. We do have an issue marker in there that it says it does not currently allow that. If we go ahead with this, what we probably need to do is change that into a note that for the narrow purpose of these algorithms, the RDF data model is considered to be extended to allow blank node identifiers in that case. So I hopefully that won't raise any hackles within the working group.
I think the cleanest solution would be to just drop that in the RDF conversion algorithms, because we state quite clearly in the syntax spec that data using those features won't round trip to RDF. So I think it's safe to just drop those statements when converting to RDF. And after all, I mean, RDF conversion is not an API call, so it's just more or less a description how you can convert JSON-LD to valid RDF.
Yeah, I think if we do that, that eliminates the digital bazaar case where they want to use this, RDF 1.1++ in order to do for Paceworm. Is that your suggestion?
Yeah.
That you would do that anyway?
Yeah.
And would the normalization algorithm make use of that, or would that also be sort of an extended normalization algorithm that would be there for Paceworm purposes?
the normalization, the RDF dataset normalization algorithm would use it. You can actually, if you just stay in JSON-LD, you can take the JSON-LD, normalize to this RDF11++, model. So you can have n quads with blank node identifiers in the predicate and graph position. Let's just say in the graph position for now. And you could digitally sign that, and everything would be kosher. And you could suck that RDF back into JSON-LD without any problem whatsoever. So even though it doesn't map directly to RDF11 concepts, you can quote unquote round trip to n quads and come back.
Does n quads allow b nodes in as graph nodes?
Well, there is no
n quads is a wreck. Yeah.
There's not. They haven't even gotten a draft out. It's just based upon the work done at, was it Derry or some similar place years ago.
So then the question I have is, why don't you normalize in JSON-LD so you never leave JSON-LD?
We started out doing that, and we were asked by the RDF working group to normalize to RDF because they wanted a general solution. So we built a general solution. And this is where we are as a result.
Well, it's fine. If you output legal RDF, you'll be able to normalize it with your algorithm. The algorithm is written such that it's agnostic about the specific things that are in those places, then it certainly works. It's a sort of a superset algorithm. I guess my concern was, are we going to, if we add something in there that specifically says we are extending RDF for this purpose, is that going to cause objections?
Well, I don't think we're saying we're extending RDF. I think we're saying we're just not going to kick out an error, that it's up to the consuming application to kick out
an
error.
We have to say we're extending it because we're emitting a triple as defined in RDF concepts. And triple is defined in RDF concepts does not allow for a property there. Now, I think that if you look at notation 3, which most or many RDF tool chains use, which does specifically allow for, I believe it allows for B nodes in property locations, certainly allows for literals and subject locations.
Yeah, it does.
That they manage to... they managed to do that anyway, even though it does extend the data model. And so this is basically in line with that. But then in notation 3 is not a wreck.
I'm sure that one time I tried leveraging that possibility and really messed things up in terms of complexity. So using B-node properties is a dangerous path.
Yeah, and I think Dave Longley was saying yesterday that we have serious concerns about B-node properties being able to be normalized. It might turn into an end to the B where B is the number of nodes problem.
Yeah,
which is pretty awful.
So dropping statements which would have a B node predicate would be reasonable way of sort of sticking to the letter of the law on that. If we were to do that, then you'd have to say, well, dropping graphs that have B node names is a pretty reasonable thing to do. And one reason to do that is that you might imagine that you're reasoning within the JSON space, and that having a B-node labeled graph is useful for reasoning, but then you're outputting the result of your reasoner, and at that point you're sort of going down to the point where you are no longer depending upon these facilities that are there for the purpose of a reasoning algorithm.
Right.
I think the safest thing to do is to drop them.
I don't know if we need to. So we are clearly in RDF dataset normalization territory, and I don't think we need to go there to finalize the JSON-LD spec. The JSON-LD spec could just say, just output it, right? And whoever ends up using that output has to then determine what if it should drop it or if it should not. In other words, I don't think it should be up to the JSON-LD algorithm in this specific case to say whether or not that data is useful. Because if you are normalizing a graph, if you're doing a digital signature and you drop that information, then you have dropped information from the graph that you're digitally signing. And that's dangerous to do without a warning or an error or something of that nature.
That's true.
So I think our approach should be, let's say, as little as possible about this. I think, Greg, you're right that we have to somehow say that we're extending the data model, but there's precedent for that in N3, and then N-quads, there's no rec for it. And we're not saying that RDF concepts is being, we're not saying we're changing RDF 1.1 concepts, but we do want to support this use case. And whoever uses this feature should do so truly understanding what the ramifications are for using blank node identifiers for graph names and blank node and predicates are. So that's a lot of hand waving, but I think I'm positive that there's a way to word this such that it's not an issue, or that we will figure out a way to get through it. But unfortunately, that's a gut feeling. We don't have the text in front of us, so it's difficult to make that claim. I guess the question is, do we want to attempt that? So if we want to attempt that, then somebody will sit down and write the text, and then we'll see if we're okay with that text.
Sorry, which text are you talking about now?
The text in the conversion to RDF algorithm that tries to say as little as possible about outputting blank node identifiers for graph names and predicates. So what we're going to do is the proposal is the conversion to RDF algorithm is going to not throw an error when a blank node is used in the predicate or graph name position, and it's just going to allow that information to pass through. And then it's up to a consuming application to interpret that information in the proper way or kick out an error.
What if we say nothing? So we just stay silent on it?
I think that's what we had suggested, but I do think that Greg has a point in that it's hard to do that and say nothing. Like, I don't know exactly what that ends up looking like in the spec.
Maybe we can just say something like blank nodes in these positions are non-compliant and therefore can be ignored or passed through at the discretion of the algorithm implementer, something like that.
Well, then you don't have interoperability if we make it optional.
I know. I think it's going to be tough to have interoperability anyway, because there might be tool chains where you're going through their sort of data set classes that restrict that ability anyway. And you would then be imposing on them the burden of increasing or changing the support that they have in for data sets to be able to support those things.
Yeah, there are going to be two different decisions that are made by various groups. One's going to keep the data in there, one's going to drop it.
Yeah, and we can't have tests that look for it. Because that would be looking for behavior which is specifically non-compliant.
Mm-hmm.
What if we just say the behavior is not defined by the spec because it's not supported by RDF, so
yeah.
The algorithms don't introduce any special checks for it, and it's up to the implementer to decide on that.
Yeah.
I'd be fine with that.
Yeah, I think that does it.
Yeah, we should do that.
Yeah.
Okay. So the proposal is, when converting, so Jason LD will continue to support blank node identifiers for predicates, let's say properties, and graph names when converting data to RDF. The specification will stay silent on the, let's see, how do we say this? The specification will stay silent on the matter?
Well, I would say we just process it as if it would be valid, and we add a sentence in prose to say that JSON-LD is a superset of RDF, and RDF can't represent blank nodes in graph, in the graph label position or in predicates, and that this specification doesn't specify anything. It's up to the implementer.
Yeah.
So we don't... in the end, what we want to say is that we don't introduce any special checks or statements to handle those cases which can't represent it in RDF. It's up to the receiving end to check that or throw those statements away or do whatever they want with them.
Usage of blank nodes as predicates or graph names will lead to invalid RDF-1.1.
For example, something like that, yeah.
I just say if we leave it undefined, that actually would allow you to publish a note that describes the behavior of systems which do allow for that. So being a note, it's non-normative. And that allows you to, say, reference the note from some other note, say, about an extension to normalization that allows for blank nodes in those positions.
But that could be added even if there was... I mean, it's true that usage of that would lead to invalid RDF-1.1. It might lead to very useful RDF-1.2 or something, but we don't know that.
Yeah, I have a feeling it's going to be RDF-2.0 before this is allowed, if it's ever allowed.
Yeah.
It's going to take a big change of mindset.
Yeah.
Kind of. But okay, anyway, let's not get into that. JSON-LD will continue to support blank node identifiers for properties and graph names. This is a proposal. When converting data to RDF-1.1, the specification will not introduce any special checks to handle these specific cases. It is up to the implementations to figure out how to convert this data to something RDF-1.1 conformant. Something conformant.
And then what about the addition to the spec text?
Which one?
How do you want to handle that within the body of the spec? To say that it's undefined, or do you want to say, what else do you want to say?
Yeah, I think we just say it's undefined.
Right.
And that's just leave it at that.
Okay.
And then those people that are implementing it will come to, hopefully they'll come to the JSON-LD community group and say, hey, what am I supposed to do? And then we can have a new permathread on what you should do in that case. Francois, you have already did a +1. Okay, so that is resolved. Yay. anyway, let's move on. The last one is the algorithm spec updates. So, okay, 218. All right, so I forgot where we left off here. Does anyone remember? Down to 5.3 maybe? 5.4? No, those are taken care of. 5.6. Looks like all of those are checked. 5.5.
I think.
Okay, 5.5 expansion.
There's one thing at the end of 5.5.
Okay. Let's see. Marcus, could you, because I'm going to try and scribe this and capture it for whoever's going to edit the spec. So, Marcus, would you mind just going down the list, and then Dave Longley, if you can respond?
Sure.
Sure. Okay, so step 3.1 says that the context memory is not removed, but someone checked that off already. I don't know if it was updated. Probably it was.
Yeah, I updated the spec to skip that member.
Okay. Then the next step, 3.2, is this. That's a bit difficult. Okay, so step 3.2 apparently isn't needed, but I can't remember why.
I think that had to do with handling keyword aliasing for graph. My guess is that this is checking the keyword graph for maybe dropping free-floating nodes or some other check.
Give me a second. Maybe I have a copy of the old stuff.
Yeah, I believe the older spec text was checking the active property against the keyword graph, but that did not take into consideration the fact that you could use an alias for graph. So the new spec text ensures that it's expanded.
I just opened the old spec. It's available. Oh, no, it's not available. It's just available locally. So the old spec said that expanded active properties set to the result of expanding active property, which was passed to the algorithm. And the thing is that I believe that expanded active property wouldn't be needed.
Well, you can't check the active property against at graph because it could have been aliased.
What could
you could alias at graph to something else?
Yeah, so you could alias add graph to foo, and then what happens if they use foo? You can't do a direct comparison, right?
Yeah, but that's just because add graph is handled. It's not handled under those other steps, under 3.4.3. If it would be handled there, then the other step wouldn't be needed. That, I think, was the feedback. So basically, I think that this whole feedback was that under the steps, and currently they are numbered, they're under 8.4. Basically, they're just validation is done there, but the keywords are not handled at all. So you don't do any processing, you're just doing some validation. If you would do some processing there, such as, expanding the value of that graph, for example, or expanding the value of at ID instead of doing that in value expansion, then the algorithm would be simplified, I think, and also the value expansion.
So you're saying that value expansion would be simplified?
I'm not sure about that. But I think that would have something to do with value compaction, but that's in a different algorithm. So the question is whether we want to split those validation part under 8.4 from the actual processing.
Marcus, are you saying that we should have a separate validation step, and then we would process after we do the validation?
Well, that's what the current state is. He wants to combine them so that you do validation and processing at the same time, rather than validation first and then processing.
Yeah, because basically you check for every keyword under 8.4, but you don't do anything with it, and then again, you start to do something with keywords down in 8.7, 8.8, 8.9, 8.10. So the question,
I believe that's because it simplifies the recursion.
Which recursion?
If you handle the list at the same place that you do the validation, or maybe a graph or something, then you have to duplicate the code that is used to recurse through an array. The same applies for type. Type and graph can both be recursed through this function, treated as arrays when they have array values in there. If you do the validation first and then the processing, you can just have common code to do the recursion. Otherwise, if you combine the two, you have to repeat yourself for doing for iterating through an array, or explicitly call twice that you need to do recursion for type and graph, rather than further down where you just always recurse.
I'm not sure. Otherwise, initialize.
Could we take this particular discussion off list and then, or just onto the mailing list and move to the next
item?
Yeah,
I think that would be easier.
That's fine with me.
Okay.
Yeah. And then further down, I think that's easier to talk about. There was something, in some places we check whether something that got expanded, some RI that got expanded, includes a colon or if it's a keyword. So we don't really check if it's a valid IRI, we just check if it includes a colon. So it could be an absolute IRI, it could be a query, but the point is that it got expanded to something that could be a valid absolute IRI. So I think Greg proposed to mint a term for that thing, that string which includes a colon, because the Dave's previous text, I think, included if it's an absolute IRI, but we don't validate if it's a valid IRI. I don't know what the current text said.
Yeah, well, essentially what's going on is we need to do some kind of check that ensures that a value has a colon or is a keyword, and we don't have a term that or it's a blank dot ID, and we don't have a term for that, and we should probably come up with some term to just use throughout the specification so we don't keep putting this sort of odd check in there telling people to look for a colon somewhere. It would be better to say it's this thing, check to make sure it's this thing, and then link to how you check to make sure it's this thing.
So the RDFA spec does that by creating a new data type called like query or absolute IRI, or Curie or Term or Absolute IRI. So we could do that, something like that. What are the two allowed, or the multiple, what are the allowed values?
I think it's like B-node, Absolute IRI, or keyword, something like that.
Keyword or a string, which includes a colon.
A keyword? Oh, I'm sorry. In what case does
so
a
you,
keyword?
You iterate over the properties in an object, and then you expand every key. And if the key expands to something which is either a keyword or includes a colon,
right, okay.
you got an IRI or a keyword. So an IRI or a blank node or whatever. The question is whether we check or whether we just say if it's a keyword or includes a colon, or whether we say whether we mint a new term or what.
Call it
well,
a JSON LD key, node key.
Hold on, what are the three types again? It's a keyword or an IRI or a blank node?
Yes.
Or a term.
No, it's a
or
term.
A term.
No, this is expansion.
For expansion.
So it's like a JSON-LD expanded key,
right,
or something.
It's a keyword, blank node, or absolute IRI?
That's what the text said. It could also be a blank node, for example. So
expanded key, yeah.
Okay, so could we just name it expanded key for now?
Well, but how do you verify that it is a valid expanded key then?
Well, the nice thing about it is it allows us to localize that in one place rather than say if it has
text.
A colon.
So that's the current spec text.
Well, I think what we're suggesting, Marcus, is that we say it has to be a valid expanded key, and that is that links to a place that says a valid expanded key is these things, you know, a string with a colon or
a
keyword.
Keywords. So there's not any keyword, right? I mean, type. Container is not. Actually, container is.
Set. No, but it would never expect.
List and value.
Any keyword, but context. The reason why it could be any keyword except context is because you could be expanding an alias.
In the context of a node, it can't be value
or
list.
Yeah, but it's not necessarily in the context of a node. Maybe it is right here, but we will also be expanding keys inside of a literal, where it's at value or at type or at language. So we would want to use the same word there.
Maybe we could use a valid property or something like that.
How about this? We can use whatever. We can just have a placeholder there, name it whatever, and then outline what the valid values for that whatever is, and then we can bike shed the actual name of it later. It seems like we could just structure the spec correctly now, and then figure out what the name for this is later.
Well, let's call it an expanded key, at least for the time being. And I think the discussion was mostly about how do we validate what an expanded key is. And that could be bike shedded.
Okay, so for right now, just expanded key?
Well, we expand it to expanded property, so we can't say if it's an expanded key then. But, yeah.
We'll deal with the name later.
All right.
We'll find
it. It's going on for a while.
I think.
Right, okay. I mean, we might as well call it foo right now. Anyway, moving on.
I think we've already used foo, so. Unfortunately, the alphabet is limited when it comes to those names.
Right.
Tofu with a PH.
Just switch to Mandarin Chinese ideographs.
Isn't fu with a PH noodles in Vietnamese?
Right?
Oh, that's pho.
No, that's PHO.
Pho, right?
Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah. True.
Okay, moving on. That's 343X.
343, that's basically the validation stuff we talked about before. And here's also the remark about value expansion. Then 3442 and value language, value and value. So
yeah, we just need some better names.
It's really difficult to read the text because we have variable names which look like prose, and then you have a lot of values in there. So one proposal was to format variables in probably type and like, how do you call it, typeset, career or something.
Well, that typically is italics for variable names.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the M.
Yeah.
The
we might want to colorize it or something, though.
Yeah, just to make it a bit easier to, you know, to distinguish from the rest of the text, because even if you read like and value language value in value, most of that would be like in italics.
Maybe italic code.
Yeah, maybe.
I think colorizing it is a good is good. Not just italics, but italics and colorize, or just mark it as a variable. Span around it and say, you know, class equals variable, and then we can figure out what to make it look like later.
The other question was whether we, like, combine language value into one word and camel case it or something, so that you see that's one variable.
Yeah,
if we sort of moved away from that
because you get into a lot of religion surrounding camel cases versus underscores. The Ruby idiom, for instance, does not use it.
Yep.
And if we just use a phrase, then there's no need to actually conjoin everything together and decide how you do that within a spec.
That's true, but yeah. I'm not sure.
That might be
simpler to understand if you read it, even though
I kind of agree with Greg, because we did this in the RDFA spec and people had very strong opinions about camel case. I mean, nobody should. You would think that people would be able to look past that, but people were very annoyed that we were camel casing things.
There are always people waiting in the wings to have opinions.
Yeah. So I think if we colorize these variables and put them, you know, let's say it's italics and it's in blue or whatever, or purple, that's going to be enough. We don't need to camel case it as well.
Okay. So 3, 4, 6 is now 8.7, and that's at least on my screen at least three lines of handling at least in that set. So maybe we wanna either separate it into several steps.
Yeah, it just looks like we need to break that into a couple sub steps. That's it.
Yeah. Inside list. What was that? Is So should we break that up into a number of steps? Is that possible?
Yeah, it looks like it is. Certainly
okay,
that
so
initialization is two steps.
Yeah.
And then we'll just make the last one the third. It'll just be three steps. It'll look a lot better.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so 8.12. There again, we handle keywords separately. So say otherwise, if expanded properties add index, add ID, add type, add value, or add language, then set the key to something. So I'm not sure if it wouldn't be simpler to handle all those keywords in one place. But yeah, we probably should discuss that on a mailing list or an issue tracker.
Yeah, I think we're just going to have to end up trying to move it around, see how it looks. If it's better,
yeah,
we'll keep it. If it's not, we won't.
I think the next three steps, they are already modified in the current like text, I think. So they basically they had to do with the validation of the expanded output, so if it's a value object or if it's not. So just see that they've already updated that part. So just take that off. And the last point is that inside list flag, the question is whether we really need that flag or whether it would be enough to check if the current active property is either at list or if the current active property is coerced to a list instead of passing that flag around.
Yeah, when I was working on this, I had some test case for this that I need to recreate. And we need to add to the... We just started creating those API errors. Once we get the API errors pinned down in the spec so that we can actually start putting those into the test suite, we'll be able to come back and check this one. And if we can remove it, obviously we should remove it, but otherwise we'll see if there's a test that highlights why we need that check.
Okay.
I started the process for getting that going. Last night I got all of the error codes or error phrases put back into the spec. So if you look at the current version of the spec, there should be wherever we previously raised an error, now we say an error has been detected, and we have a phrase for the type of error it is. So that part is in there. I need either Greg or Marcus to go, or together to go in and figure out what needs to be changed to accommodate both of them. But the error text is in there now, and I also tweak some of the error lists, remove some that we didn't need or that were consolidated, and I added a couple maybe.
Mm-hmm. I think the way that you've written it looks fine to me. For instance, invalid local context error has been detected. That's pretty much what I was going for. Now, invalid local context could itself link to the definition of an invalid local context, or perhaps just link to the JSON-LD error code section. Oh, it can link
okay,
to
so
the...
Should those
it could
become
be a definition
PREFs?
Down there. I like the fact that they're styled a little bit differently, but
we should be able to keep that.
Maybe it can be done with a not a T ref, but a DT ref or something.
Okay.
Currently, I think it's code with a special class, it's an error class on it. So we could certainly pre-process that in respec, I think, and to link it to the error table.
That would be a way to do it. In fact, you could do it if you just label the ones in the error table with a ID.
Yeah, I don't know how to do that because respec creates that automatically out of the web idle stuff.
Oh well, they are then labeled.
So yeah, probably they have some ID or something, or
see.
Modify that part.
No, it's not labeled. I mean, in the table, in the enumeration description, they're not labeled. It's just code.
Okay.
So if those code items have IDs, then if you have a code item with a, you could define a some ref type with has something that allows you to create an href which is to whatever the ID would be based upon the content of the code. That's basically the way respec does it.
Yeah, I can have a look at that. So, just to make sure we are on the same page, you want that the error code in the spec, in the algorithm, links down to the entry in that table, right?
It seems to tie them together better.
Okay. Yeah, we'll see how we can do that with respec. Shouldn't be too
No, respec also, you know, we end up using TREFs and whatnot, but respec doesn't really require that. Typically, respec works using definitions and bare anchors. That's the way that it's implemented internally. The TREF stuff, I think, was added using the RDFA work in order to get more granularity and to create different types of links. But we could be leveraging respec's native behavior a lot better in this case. If we used definitions and anchors, you can always either surround them with code or style them with some class.
Yeah, I will check that.
Okay, it looks like 5.7 is dealt with, 5.8 is dealt with, 5.9 is dealt with, and then 5.10, the compaction algorithm, is the next thing that needs to be discussed.
The first checkbox that's on here I might have fixed. I'll have to go back and take a look. It's just a matter of passing the inverse context. Or explicitly saying that you're passing the inverse context to the sub-algorithms. I wanted to talk about the compact arrays option. I was going to put this in last night, and then I thought that it may or may not be an issue for Greg with the way that it gets worded, because talking about the compact arrays option as an option is tying it directly to the API instead of having it be part of the algorithm, and I know that subtle things like that Greg was taking an issue with before. And I don't know if we wanted to, I mean, the only way around that I can see is to create it in another flag that you have to talk about in the algorithm and then map that to an option, and that seems like overkill for me, so I just want to get Greg's opinion.
Well, I think the way that I was trying to say it before was to say something more like if compacting arrays or something like that, rather than speak specifically about flags and options. I mean, flags are in there I don't think they're going away. So the difference between a flag and an option is subtle. I think option is perhaps a little less API-ish than flag.
So what would your preference be for the language?
I think you could say if there is an option to to retain or to use arrays.
The choice has been made to compact arrays and then do so. Something like that.
Choice would be odd, but I think if
okay.
the algorithm was invoked with the option to something or other. It was basically just a feeling because I was a little uncomfortable with being tied so closely to the API that I think the important takeaway from that is just is to consider that when looking at algorithm and text, and which is what you're doing. So.
All right. Well, I'll try to come up with something that's prosy that is clear enough to API implementers that's where the option is. It gets used.
Great.
Okay.
We are 15 minutes past the hour. We might want to stop at this point and switch over to publication timeline if nobody disagrees.
Maybe just discuss one thing for 1 or 2 minutes.
Sure.
I think that should be rather. So I added a comment to the very end of this issue because we talked about that last week, but I couldn't really get my head around how to group the algorithms together in like separate sections. So there is a proposal, but especially like IRI expansion or IRI compaction, I'm not sure whether they should be, for example, under context processing or under the expansion algorithm group.
Or maybe their own group entirely. I'm not sure.
Sorry?
I said, or maybe their own group entirely. I know Greg was talking about it as an evaluation context. I don't know that I would prefer that term or that name. I know that they're used by context processing, but the fact that they're used by the other algorithms as well means that maybe they just need their own grouping.
Like IRI processing, for example.
Well, I mean, it depends on what you consider. If my feeling was that these things were sort of tightly bound to the concept of a context, and in my implementation, they're basically methods implemented in a context class. So when I am expanding an IRI, it's an operation I'm doing relative to the context. And in many cases, you'll see that the first argument to these algorithms is the act of context, which basically is what binds it or can make it be considered to be a method of that.
Well, my only issue with that is you could say that about every single one of these algorithms. They could all be bound to a context like that. It seems, in my mind anyway, it seems somewhat arbitrary where you draw the line. It seems more like it's some of these are little sub-algorithms that you don't call them on their own as their own transformation operations. Maybe IRI processing or something similar to that, like what Marcus is saying, would make more sense to me.
I'd be fine with that. I think the main thing is to try to create some structure in order to not just have a flat sea of algorithms.
So should we introduce another group like IRI processing, or does someone have a better term for that?
Yes, I don't have a better name for that. I feel like the name should be a little better, but we can call it that for now. Or someone else here could suggest a better name.
Well, they could also be bound together with the various algorithms so that in expansion section, you've got expansion, IRI expansion, value expansion. Compaction, you have IRA compaction, term selection, value compaction.
Yeah,
that's fine with me. I realize, I think Marcus wanted to move it up because it's a concept that gets introduced very quickly, but it might be easier to just put them with their general concepts in this case.
I don't mind about the other algorithms, but especially IRI expansion, that's so tightly bound to context processing that it doesn't make much sense to put it somewhere else, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't process the context at all without IRI expansion.
Maybe they're like utility sub-algorithms, or I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay, so maybe Dave Longley, if you could just kind of review that and maybe respond on the mailing list on whether or not
sure.
you plan to how exactly you plan to go about doing that, because it's 11:20 and we should definitely talk about timeline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, so we have kind of pulled the trigger on handing the FCGS, the Final Community Group Specification, over the RDF Working Group. Hopefully they will talk about it tomorrow on the call, about getting some reviews from the RDF Working Group, potentially putting out a Working Draft publication or a Last Call Working Draft publication. Before they put the Last Call out, we have to remember to put BASE in there. But I think that's the only edit that needs to be made to that spec before we put it out. The API... go ahead.
And with that, we mark property generators as at risk.
Yeah. Now, are they... They're not marked at risk, though, in the syntax spec, I believe, which we completed work on.
Well, but we can still change the syntax spec. Otherwise, we couldn't add at base.
Well, the working group has not released an LC for it, so certainly we can do it in that context. Yeah.
That'll be good. Have we discussed our positions more on actually dropping them?
They substantially complicate it, and it's not clear that there is any real use case out there, given that Drupal is abandonous.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel that there were other features that I would have wanted to add prior to that. So the only reason we pushed through with that was because of that, and now that's not a case anymore.
I'm fine with dropping it. I always thought it was sort of a hack.
So I'm concerned a bit about dropping it. One, because maybe Lynn would be able to use property generators in the future and sneak it into an extension module for Drupal. And if we take it away, one of the key features that she needed wouldn't be there anymore, and her desire to add it would kind of go away. So I think we should discuss this with Lynn a bit more before dropping it. I think Stefan also might have had a use case for it, so we should also discuss this with Stefan before dropping it. The other argument for keeping it is that we did all the hard work to figure out how it should work, and even if it is a pain, taking it out of the spec at this point I don't feel it really accomplishes anything except for maybe simplifying the algorithm runtime a bit.
I think marking it at risk really accomplishes what we want, right? It allows us to take it out later on.
Right. I'm not arguing with marking it as risk. I think we should absolutely do that. I'm talking about actually taking it out.
Yeah, I think that taking it out after all the work we've done, and specifically what we really want is feedback. So that's sort of the purpose of that.
But I think that the work we've done really showed us how complex this feature is. I mean, compared to the rev feature, which we don't have, which I've already implemented a long time ago, it's so much simpler in comparison. So I think that it's sort of skewed complexity, if you will, but that's, of course, very personal point of view.
It also polluted the expansion algorithm such that we had to relabel blank nodes and things like that. So, I mean, the feature on its own was complicated, but it also affected other algorithms and made them more complicated.
Okay. Well, I mean, so right now we're just adding it as we're setting an at-risk marker on it.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to make sure that we actually capture everything, though. We're adding an at-risk for property generators, and we're adding base and adding and setting that as at-risk, and then we're clarifying blank nodes as predicates and graph names. Clarifying JSON-LD supports that. Are there any other changes we're making to the JSON-LD 1.0 spec before it goes into LC?
Do you want to make a concrete proposal for marking property generators as at risk? Because for everything else, we have a solution, I think.
Sure. Mark property generators as an at risk feature in JSON-LD 1.0.
I'm wondering whether we should do the same for data indexing, just to be prepared. I certainly see that feature is really usable and valuable, but I could see some potential pushback because it's kind of metadata, but not really, and it's a bit fuzzy how that data comes in and how it's used. The structural metadata, basically.
I'd push back pretty hard for getting data indexing out. I guess the question.
Yeah,
is,
I would do so as well.
Okay, so and then I think at that point you can't really remove the feature because there are two people that have use cases that say we really really like this feature, don't take it out, and those people usually win out over the people that are saying, take it out. Because the arguments for taking features out is usually, there's too much complexity added and nobody needs the feature. And if we're looking at property generators, that's a fairly valid argument. But if you're looking at data indexing, it's not really that complicated to implement.
True.
And, we're saying, hey, look, there's some fairly valid use cases for this. Specifically, what happens when people want to index their data in like they do in JSON all the time.
So I
agree that it would be safe to mark it, but I don't think we ever intend to really remove the data indexing feature.
No, it would be purely to be on the safe side, but I'm not sure if that's required. It's just a thought.
I think it's good to be cautious, but I think that's a little too cautious, meaning that I don't think we need to be worried about that.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, so that's JSON-LD 1.0 LC, and we'll just try to push that. Basically, we're going to get review comments back from the RDF working group, and they could be really, really bad. Bad meaning that there are people in the RDF working group that just feel that this is too much of a deviation from RDF, or they, nitpick on some of the blank node identifiers as graph name issues. So we'll have to respond to those review comments and then see if we can get the last call as a result. The other document that we need to get into last call is the API the algorithms and API spec, and we're just not done editing it, and it's probably going to take another one or two meetings to get through the rest of these. Actually, it might only take one more meeting to get through them. So the question, I guess, to the group is, are we concerned about that enough to do kind of a super session where we just sit down and go through everything, or do we want to just leave that until next Tuesday?
Sorry, what was the super session about?
To go through the rest of the editor's comments on the API spec.
That would be fine either way. Depends, of course, which day and if I'm available, but I would be fine. And
this week is completely packed for me as far as calls are concerned, so I probably couldn't, unless it's like Friday, I wouldn't be able to do that. And personally, I don't feel that we're under that much time pressure to get it out. I know we we wanted to get this spec out to last call by the end of February, but if it's the first week in March, I don't think that's terrible.
I think there isn't that much missing from the API spec anymore. I think we already fixed most of it, and probably we should do another review ourselves. Just go over all the algorithms, and then I think we're almost done. Most part was really about property generators, and they fixed, I think, all of the bugs I've found, so the algorithms should work fine now, I think.
Okay, so we'll just do another 90-minute session next Tuesday and try to finish everything up. Okay, we're at the end of the call. Anything else before we leave?
I can just happily report that we're having much use for JSON-LD now in the National Library of Sweden. It's in the editor and it's in the Elasticsearch index, and we seem to be actually ahead of the Library of Congress, possibly, because they are developing the vocabulary bib frame, and given that it's an unstable library, and the other library, which is a bit contested because of its complexity or vocabulary, is the RDA Ferber-based vocabularies. But what we do now is that we have our JSON shapes in place, and then we have two contexts which we use for bookkeeping, where we use mappings to BibFrame in one and RDA in the other, so we can sort of mutate the actual RDF at will, depending on which vocabulary will win, if you will.
Cool.
It's really nice.
Speaking as a U.S. citizen, go Sweden.
Really?
Thanks.
The other thing that was tweeted earlier is the BBC is giving a talk at upcoming Sumtech in San Francisco on their use of JSON-LD in their LickData program. Yeah,
that's really, really nice. It looks like they use it in a similar fashion as I did previously with the using Sparkle Construct and serializing it to JSON-LD for APIs.
Yeah, well, that's what we do at Wikia.
Yeah.
We've pretty much moved all over to a triple store now, and we use that for everything. And just turn the use constructs in order, or describes in order to get data out.
Yeah. Really effective.
Cool. Very cool. And last but not least, happy birthday, Greg, tomorrow.
Oh, happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Greg.
Oh, happy birthday.
Today is actually the day that Rebecca's, my wife's, third cookbook came out. So it's released and available on Amazon today. It happens to also be our anniversary. So everything all happens at once.
Nice. And it rains and pours.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you have a good birthday tomorrow.
Thank you.
And if you want to insure it, don't show up for the RDF working group call.
yeah.
All right, guys. Have a good week. And for those in the RDF A working group, we have a call on Thursday. Just heads up.
Yeah.
All right. Have a good week,
thank
everyone.
You.
See ya.
Right. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.